So we're on the second verse of the sixth chapter. And this is really closely tied to what we were talking about earlier. This is page 275. So we started the class early. Much to everyone's surprise. So we had talked a little bit about renunciation. In fact, Srila Prabhupada had mentioned it in the purport that we were studying, that one should not become a devotee of renunciation. And Bhakti Chris had mentioned that Krishna consciousness is a balanced life between bhoga and tyag. Bhoga means trying to enjoy the material world, which is ultimately impossible. And that leads to tyag, oh, I'll just give it up. And then one goes back, forth. But Krishna consciousness is the reality. It's the perfect balance because one is serving the senses of Krishna. Hrishikena Hrishikesha, Sevanam Bhakti Ruchite. Therefore, one's own senses become satisfied and one experiences a higher taste. And through that, not only are we detached automatically from matter, but Vasudeve Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojita Janaya Yashu Vairagyam Gyanam Chayara Haitukam. Concomitant with performing direct service to Krishna comes Gyan, knowledge, and Vairagya, detachment from the world. And we discussed how those fortify the practitioner, because without knowledge you don't know what to do, and with no detachment, you can't do it, even if you know. So we're on text number 2. Yan sannyasamiti prahur yogam tang vidhi pandava na hyasanyasya sankalpo yogi bhavati kashyana. One more time. Yan sannyasamiti prahur yogam tang vidhi pandava na hyasyan hyasya sankalpo yogi bhavati kashyana. Yam, what? Sannyasam. You can repeat. Sannyasam. Renunciation. Renunciation. Iti. Thus. Prahu. Prahu. They say. Yogam. Linking with the Supreme. Tam. That. Vidhi. You must know. Pandava. O son of Pandu, na, never, he certainly, asanyasta, without giving up, sankalpa, desire for self-satisfaction, yogi, a mystic transcendentalist, bhavati, becomes, kashchana, anyone. Translation, what is called renunciation, you should know to be the same as yoga, or linking oneself with the Supreme, O son of Pandu, for one can never become a yogi unless he renounces the desire for sense gratification. Purport. Real sannyas yoga or bhakti means that one should know that his constitutional position as the living entity and act accordingly. The living entity has no separate independent identity. He is the marginal energy of the Supreme. When he is entrapped by material energy, he is conditioned. And when he is Krishna conscious or aware of the spiritual energy, then he is in his real natural state of life. Therefore, when one is in complete knowledge, one ceases all material sense gratification or renounces all kinds of sense gratificatory activities. This is practiced by the yogis who restrain the senses from material attachment. But a person in Krishna consciousness has no opportunity to engage his senses in anything which is not for the purpose of Krishna. Therefore, a Krishna conscious person is simultaneously a sannyasi and a yogi. The purpose of knowledge and of restraining the senses as prescribed in the Gyan and Yoga processes is automatically served in Krishna consciousness. If one is unable to give up the activities of his selfish nature, then Gyan and Yoga are of no avail. The real aim is for a living entity to give up all selfish satisfaction and to be prepared to satisfy the Supreme. A Krishna conscious person has no desire for any kind of self-enjoyment. He is always engaged for the enjoyment of the Supreme. One who has no information of the Supreme must therefore be engaged in self-satisfaction, because no one can stand on the platform of inactivity. All purposes are perfectly served by the practice of Krishna consciousness. So the first sentence, real sannyas yoga or bhakti, means that one should know his constitutional position as the living entity and act accordingly. Bhana, you want to comment?
The process of, it's explaining in a nutshell here, the process of Krishna consciousness, which simply means one acts according to his constitutional position. One knows his constitutional position as a living entity, that he's eternal and part and parcel of Krishna, Krishnera Srupa Hoy, Nidhira Krishna Das. And so that in the nutshell is the whole sum and substance of the whole process of bhakti, devotional service. If one knows what one is, and then that's knowledge, and then engages accordingly, then automatically, by engaging in that process, everything he needs to fulfill that understanding will be given by the Lord.
Thank you. Also, in the last sentence, one who has no information of the Supreme must therefore be engaged in self-satisfaction, because no one can stand on the platform of inactivity. So let's just talk about that for a minute. If one has no information of the Supreme, must be therefore engaged in self-satisfaction, because no one can stand on the platform of inactivity. Karunath?
I'm thinking of Patrick's question about Nishkarmam Apyachuta Bhava Varjitam. He was saying, but how can anyone have a conception of, you know, self-realization without a conception of the Supreme? And the answer is, yeah, he's right. That's what Narada Muni is saying, that if you try, that to try to stand on the platform of renunciation without the solid platform of understanding, you know, accepting Krishna's lotus feet, accepting devotional service, then one is in an unstable position, because the soul is by nature active and it will seek out some activity. It can't remain inactive. So if it doesn't know how to engage in spiritual activity, then it must engage in material activity. But if even Naishkarmya doesn't look good without devotional service, then material activity looks even worse. Mm. Therefore, Narada Muni says, you must describe devotional service. And the verse that Prabhupada recites again and again from the 10th canto is Aruya Krichchena Parang Padang Tito Padang Tito Nadrita Yushmad Angrayaha. That that those who think themselves liberated but they haven't accepted your lotus feet, they're understood to be, their intelligence is not completely pure, and they have to fall down again unless they actually come to the platform of devotional service.
Thank you. As Srila Prabhupada mentions, that we might see activity, maybe even intense activity, and then mistake that for being progress just because somebody's moving or something's moving. And he gives the example of the monkeys in India. And many of you have seen them, especially in Vrindavan. In Vrindavan, there's a lot of monkeys. And they're quite active. And sometimes they grab onto trees and they'll shake them so hard that, you know, all the leaves come off. And they'll shake telephone poles and things like that. They're pretty strong. They're stronger than humans. And they're always engaged in some kind of activity. You can hear them in the morning if you're walking early in Vrindavan, just waking up. You know, they're yawning and getting up, getting ready to wreck stuff. their daily activity. They chew through, you know, telephone wires, and they do all kinds of things. No doubt they're active, but their activity really has no meaning. It's not helpful. It's not beneficial. So there's a lot of activity going on in the world. And Srila Prabhupada, in that relation, gives a verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam, second canto, Partiva dharano dhumas tasmat agnis trayimayaha tamasastu rajas tasmat satvam yad brahmadarshanam. That there's a progression in human life out of the mode of ignorance, which is compared to earth. And from earth comes the wood, and from the wood comes smoke, and from the smoke comes fire. Fire is useful. It can be used for heating things, for cooking things, and ultimately for Vedic yajna, because we can't see Vishnu with our material eyes. We make the fire yajna, and the representation of Vishnu's tongue becomes the flames, and we offer grains and offer the fire yajna. But it's beneficial, because as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, this is the purpose of human form of life, yajna vai Vishnu. By offering sacrifice to Vishnu, then everything becomes possible. Advancement in life becomes possible. All abundance becomes possible. One can live happily and at the same time make spiritual advancement. So without the activity which is connected to transcendence, or at least in the mode of goodness, you're left with smoke and raw wood, which look like something, but they actually don't do anything. Smoke disturbs, whereas fire serves. So it's a progressive march for the human form of life, especially to come up to the mode of goodness, to cultivate activities which are connected to the mode of goodness. Pramanais tatsaracharais tarabhyasar nirantaram. There, first of all, has to be scriptural evidence, because Krishna says later in the Bhagavad Gita, ye shastra vidamutsri ja vartate kamakarata, nasa siddhimavapnoti, nasukam na param gatim. You have to be guided by shastra. We're guided by shastra, and we know what to do properly, what's to do and what's not to do. And in Vaishnav society also, Rupa Goswami has said that without following shastra, you may concoct some kind of devotional service or some kind of process, but it'll simply be a disturbance to society. So pramanais, a human being has to take evidence from the shastra and follow carefully. When we close our eyes, as human beings, actually, we're supposed to be able to see God. That's the nature of a human being, Akurnas closing his eyes. Any luck? Yam shama sundaram achintu guna sorupam. That the form of shama sundar is there for someone whose consciousness is pure. And if you don't get that when you close your eyes, then you have to call tech support, because there's a problem. So pramanais means that you take help from the shastra, pramanais tat saracharais. And then your activity, sadachar, means that activities have to be pure also. Krishna mentions there's austerities of speech, there's austerities of the mind, the austerities of the body. Those are mentioned in the 17th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Does anybody know what those are? Practically, yes?
Anudvegang karang bhakyam, satyang priyahitang chayat, svadhyaya pyasanang chayva, Vanmaya tapochite. The austerities of the speech consist of speaking truthfully, dearly, Priya, and reciting the Vedas regularly, svadhyaya, reciting the Vedic scriptures regularly, and avoiding offensive speech.
So austerities of speech. Then there's austerities of the mind. You know what the austerities of the mind are? He's got them right here. Give him the microphone.
Mana prasada samyattam.
Can you give the text number too?
Yeah, this is 1716. Mana prasada samyattam. Maunam atma vinigraha.
Bhava samshuriti etad. Tapomana samuchyate.
Satisfaction, simplicity, gravity, self-control, and purification of one's existence are the austerities of the mind.
Purport. To make the mind austere is to detach it from sense gratification. It should be so trained that it can be always thinking of doing good for others. The best training for the mind is gravity in thought. One should not deviate from Krishna consciousness and must always avoid sense gratification. To purify one's nature is to become Krishna conscious. Satisfaction of the mind can be obtained only by taking the mind away from thoughts of sense enjoyment. The more we think of sense enjoyment, the more the mind becomes dissatisfied. In the present age, we unnecessarily engage the mind in so many different ways for sense gratification, and so there is no possibility of the mind's becoming satisfied. The best course is to divert the mind to Vedic literature, which is full of satisfying stories, as in the Puranas and the Mahabharata. One could take advantage of this knowledge and thus become purified. The mind should be devoid of duplicity, and one should think of the welfare of all. Silence means that one is always thinking of self-realization. The person in Krishna consciousness observes perfect silence in this sense. Control of the mind means detaching the mind from sense enjoyment. One should be straightforward in his dealings and thereby purify his existence. All these qualities together constitute austerity and mental activities. Sadachar, we're talking about we have to act properly. This is part of the austerity of the mind. And who heard something from this purport? You can, one point that you heard that you can bring back out. Yes, give to Narhari Dave Prabhu the microphone.
If you become straightforward in your dealings, then you then your existence becomes purified.
Why?
Your mind doesn't think of, you know, so many duplicitous activities, and you know, you become simple-hearted. Otherwise, it starts conjecturing so many things, so many ideas, how to present, how to lie, how to behave differently. Rather, if you're straightforward, you accept who you are, you're humble, and become simple, and it purifies your existence.
Nice point. Thank you very much. How about another point? Bring out another point.
Yeah, actually, he mentioned very, very nicely about the lessons of dealings in a straightforward way, in an honest way, at a personal level. But also it applies at a very, very big corporate level too, because on the radios I've been hearing a lot about the not so straightforward dealings on Wall Street, where they control the world's money, and some of the largest corporations are falling like dominoes. For one thing, they did not, you know, did their dealings in a straightforward way, but in a crooked way, and their actions is affecting actually the entire population, the taxpayers now. So it affects at the personal level, individually, as well as at the very high level where they are controlling the
nice point. Srivas Pandit Prabhu last night was telling me a story that he had a colleague in his office who kept thinking that he wanted to move somewhere else where he'd have a better advantage. And he was thinking of all these places that would be cheaper to live and he'd have a better standard of living and so on and so forth. And then he moved to, where's the place that just had a big hurricane? He moved to Texas. I don't mean to laugh. I don't know where he is right now. But he moved. Anyway, he told me that I could recount this story, but he moved to that place, and then he hasn't heard from him since, you know. So, but the point was that through adjustment in the material world, whatever we try to do, becomes complex. Wherever you go, there you are. If you go to Bengal, you'll take your fortune with you. There's an old saying. Yes, Chris.
Yes.
Microphone.
It has to do with, the person moved so they could have a little bit more than what they already had, like live a better standard of living. They were focusing just on, you know, okay, well, if I move here, I can probably have a better amount of money and a thing that's not as expensive, so I can have more things. People just focus on more things and their status in the world that I see. It's just, you know, the ego controls, you know, a lot of you let your ego control your mind, pain body, whatever you'd like to call it. It takes over and makes you think you have to have some kind of label or tag in this world. It doesn't matter who you are or where you work. You know, none of that stuff matters. And that's, yeah.
Nice points. And towards simplicity, by adjustment, we can try to find some place where we'll be happy and then we'll be unlimitedly dissatisfied. But the point is, Narayana Paraksarve Nakutaschana Bibhyati Swarga Pavarga Narakeshu Apituljana Darshana Srimad Bhagavatam. For a devotee doesn't care where he or she lives because the devotee is engaged in Krishna's service. So Galveston or San Francisco, the point is that the devotee is going there for service, not for sense gratification or not to make some adjustment. This is real simplicity. The devotee will take a job in hell if it's for Krishna. And it's all the same because the devotee's happy in whatever situation. So this makes life simple because you simply follow Krishna's service. I know sometimes... Yes, Karnath.
Sorry, I know I'm talking a lot. But there was one thing that really jumped out at me.
We insist upon it.
One thing really jumped out at me in this purport was that one of the austerities of the mind was satisfaction, and that you know, which you think, wow, that's not an austerity. That's good. He said, and Prabhupada said in the purport that as long as you have material desires, you can't be satisfied. You know that when we're in the mode of passion and we think I have to go get something else, you know, if I get that thing, then I'll be satisfied. That means, by nature, that means we're not satisfied. And I was hearing a class by Indra Jumnaswamy where he was talking about how several years ago, they did, like the UN or something, did a survey of where the people are the most happy, considering different factors and things. And he was thinking, oh, the United States must be way up there on the list. But actually, it was kind of pretty far down. And Bangladesh was considered the most happy place, even though it's one of the poorest countries in the world. And he said that he didn't understand that until he went there himself, and he found that people have very nice personal dealings and relationships with each other, even though they're very poor. But the idea being that we can't be satisfied. We won't get satisfaction as long as we're longing for anything different than what we already have.
Vamanadeva, when he went to beg from Bali Maharaj, who owned everything, asked for three things only. And they were just little teeny steps because he only had small feet. And he said, I'll just take three paces of land. And Bali Maharaj said, surely you want more than that. I'm the emperor. You know, you're a little Brahmin. Take more. And Bali Maharaj said, if I wanted more than that, then I wouldn't be happy if you gave it to me. And the Buddha also said that he recognized that the difficulty in the world was trishna, the thirst for material things. It's a thirst that never goes away. You take more and you want more. So this satisfaction, learning to be satisfied with what Krishna gives us. Yadrichcha labha santushto. This is a very interesting word, yadrichcha. It means things that come of their own accord. And naturally, of course, Narada Muni has explained that there are things that will come of their own accord. Just as distress comes without asking for it, similarly happiness will come on the material side. You'll get what you deserve, so you don't have to endeavor so hard. So you can be satisfied and think that what comes of its own accord naturally by Krishna's arrangement will come anyway. We can be completely satisfied. I heard in the Chaitanya Bhagavat today that the Lord becomes so pleased with someone who sits and chants japa in front of Tulsi, that he brings all opulence, all satisfaction to the home of such a person. There are certain things that are completely seem intangible that actually bring real satisfaction. Even on the material side, people go to museums. What is the actual function of a museum? You walk in and you look at paintings of different kinds. And is there a satisfaction in it? Yes, very much so. People and music. People go to concerts all the time to hear other people play music. Is there any actual practical utility to that? Are you building any buildings or making a new software program? Not really, but still there's satisfaction in it. And in the devotional realm, there are activities that are completely satisfying, like chanting japa in front of Tulsi. It's recommended by Srila Prabhupada in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Tulsi is a pure devotee and blesses someone who chants, and Krishna becomes so pleased somebody who chants before Tulsi Devi. And until someone actually engages in that activity and, early in the morning, get up early at 4 a.m., clean your room, take a bath, sit down, put on tilak, then sit in front of Tulsi on your seat and make a prayer, please, Krishna, help me to always engage in your service and serve your devotees. And then begin chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare. And in that atmosphere, chanting the holy name in front of Tulsi, sun not quite risen yet, no other distraction, the mind can become peaceful. And then actually one can feel some happiness, as we heard in the sixth chapter, Yam Labha Chaparam Labham. There's a pleasure where you feel there's no greater gain than this. Where do you get that on the material side? You don't. It doesn't come. It's always, there's endlessly more. I'm given $1 million, and I think, wait a minute, he had 3 million. He should have given me 1.5 million. You see this, in calculating, what we're going to get from the material side. It's never enough. In fact, there was a lyric to a song, that too much is not enough. And so that's material life. But chanting before Tulsi early in the morning, having taken a bath, applied tilak, sitting down, praying to the Lord, hearing the syllables of the Maha Mantra, complete satisfaction. One doesn't want anything else. Haridas Thakur sat all day long and chanted. And even the envious constable in the city saw that Haridas Thakur was chanting and chanting and chanting, and he thought, I'll make him fall down, because he was envious. So he arranged to send a prostitute. And the prostitute came. He was hired by the constable and came to entice Haridas Thakur. And then, of course, they were going to have somebody waiting and observing, and then they'd come and arrest him and make a scandal out of the whole thing. So what happened? Haridas is chanting. The prostitute comes and says, I'm here to see you. Makes provocative motions, and Haridas says, okay, but you have to wait till I finish my rounds. I'll certainly enjoy with you, but I'm not done with my rounds yet, so if you'll just wait, then I'll satisfy your desires. So he goes on chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Hare. But he doesn't come to the end of his rounds, and the prostitute goes home and comes back the next day, same scenario. And Haridas Thakur says, surely today I'll be able to finish my rounds and your desires will be fulfilled. And she waits and she's hearing him chant, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram. Again, she goes home, tells the constable, tomorrow for sure, I'll have him and we'll be able to arrest him. And meanwhile, in her mind, she's thinking, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hearing Haridas Thakur chant, and in that atmosphere, her mind becomes affected by the holy names, and then she comes back the third night, and she can't contain herself, and she reveals to Haridas Thakur what her plan was, and surrenders to him, and says, I was part of a diabolical plot to destroy you, but I don't want that anymore. I want you to instruct me. So Haridas Thakur instructed her to give away her possessions, to sit down in front of Tulsi Devi and to chant the holy name of the Lord, and that's what she did. And she became famous as a devotee. Devotees become famous, actually. There are two kinds of heroes in this world, Srila Prabhupada says in the Srimad Bhagavatam. One is the kind of hero that has all kinds of material opulence and enjoyment and seems to, the kind that play a concert and then wreck the hotel room afterwards, and they don't care because, right? There's this kind of hero that doesn't care for any rule or regulation and seems to go on enjoying in the material world. And then there's the hero who's the actual hero who can control the senses. Vacho vegam, manasa krodha vegam, jihva vegam, udrafasta vegam, etan vegam, yo vishaheta dhira, sarvamapimam, prithivim nashishat. This is Rupa Goswami describes how a person who has been able to control all the urges of the senses through attainment of Krishna consciousness, through higher knowledge and absorption in chanting the holy names, becomes actually the master of the world. I mean, everyone wants to be the master of the world, but ends up subjugated by what? The senses. But the person who is able to control the senses, prithivim nashishat, everyone in the world becomes that person's disciple, because the real masters of this world are the senses. So Krishna consciousness may seem intangible in a sense, but chanting in front of Tulsi Devi, or seeing the deity, smelling the incense that's offered to the deity. Who can name some more devotional activities? There's 64 items of devotional service. Hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. Just by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam and the association of devotees, a change takes place within the heart. It seems intangible. How? Just by sitting and hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. What else? Worshipping the deity. One develops love by worshipping the deity, the form of the Lord. What else? Cleaning the temple. Just by cleansing the temple, one cleanses one's heart. Taking prasadam. Everything becomes purified. Prasade sarva dukanam hanir asyo pajayate prasana chetaso yashu buddhi parivatishte. You attain all these things. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that what the yogi will attain after 10,000 years of meditation, we will get today just by honoring the Lord's prasad. What else? Residing in the holy dham. There's something that you get in the holy dham you can't get anywhere else. Remembering the names of the Lord. Sadhu sangha. Just by association with devotees, you can attain all perfection, even if it's just a fraction of a second. What else? Distributing books. Just like, it's like chanting Hare Krishna. Prabhupada mentions that as practical samadhi. What else?
Wearing tilak.
So these may, and we see in this Brahma Samhita, there's a list of all the activities that go on in the spiritual world. You know the verse that has the very long purport? Ananda chinmay rasa pratibhavitabhi stabhirya eva nijarupataya kalabhi goloka eva nivasat yakilat mabuto govindamadi purusham tamaham bhajami. The activities that are going on in the spiritual world have to do with dancing, singing, playing musical instruments, things like that, all in connection with Krishna. So the point is that by these, by connection to Krishna consciousness, the direct activities of bhakti yoga, the senses become purified, and we lose our designation as being this body and the things in relationship with the body, and we're able to serve Krishna in a favorable way. And by that process, the yogendras say to Maharaj Nimi, even if you run with your eyes closed in that process of bhakti yoga, the direct process of serving Krishna through these activities, 64 activities, you will never trip and fall, even if you have your eyes closed. Supada mulam bhajata priyasya taktanya bhava sahari parishaha vikarma yachchot patitam katanchit dhunoti sarvam pratisani vishtaha. That if you're engaged in this kind of activity, that even if you have some slip, that Krishna will cover for you. He'll make up for it because he's within your heart. He's within the heart of every living entity, and he knows your mentality. So, bhakti is the means for complete detachment from the world. Those who engage in devotional service automatically have jnana and vairagya and experience ultimate happiness. Om Tat Sat. Hare Krishna. Any other points, questions? Good news, because Acharya just walked in. Hare Krishna. Huh? Oh, and Bir Krishna Prabhu is back. Hare Bol. Hare Krishna. Welcome home. Hare Krishna. And when I was in Vrindavan several times, Bir Krishna Prabhu and his wife invited me over to have prasadam. And I've never had such an experience in my life. They're staying at the Gita Ashram. Is that the name of it? The Bhagavad Gita Ashram? I didn't know what I was in for. But he invited me over prasadam. And actually, I went there with a godbrother the first couple times, so I had a little bit of a defense. But he sat down with us, and he kept feeding us more and more. There were all these tullies, and every time they were half empty, he'd fill it back up again. And somehow, by the soothing sound of his voice, he made us keep eating and eating. And I don't think I've ever eaten as much in my life. And going, I had to practically roll home back to the ashram. And I don't think I got up for another 6 hours. I had to just lie there. And there's some taking prasadam, being fed prasadam by devotees. It's a very powerful experience that I'll never forget. Closing remarks? Anything that stuck in your mind from the night? We started off with Krishna book. Then we had Shushupanishad. We chanted a chapter of Bhagavad Gita. We chanted a bhajan. One impression you're taking away from anything in the class? Rakshit and then Bana.
In this purport which we discuss, it talked about the constitutional position of the living entity. And Bhanabhatta explained what exactly it was. And I was reminded at that time about this question that was asked by Sanatan Goswami to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he said that as a living entity, you are not only the spirit soul, part and parcel of Krishna, but you are actually the servitor to the Lord. Your constitutional position, being part and parcel of Krishna, is automatically that you will serve the Supreme Lord. So I reminded him.
Thank you. Nice point. Bana.
I just wanted to mention, because in reading through the verses of this chapter where Arjuna is asking Krishna about the state of the unsuccessful yogi, and Krishna says that one who does good is never overcome by evil, and he says that how the fallen devotee, he first of all is given enjoyment for many, many years in the planets of the pious, and then he's able to take birth as a in a family of rich mercantile family, or a family of devotees. And I was just struck by that, about how kind Krishna is, how any other process for self-realization doesn't come anywhere as close, because Krishna is so kind upon anyone who just performs a little bit of devotional service. The result we get is unfathomable compared to just that little amount we perform, because Krishna is so happy with us. And I was just struck by how kind the Lord is.
Nice point. Okay, one last. Ramaswamy's smiling. Maybe he has something.
Regarding the same point that Bhanubhatta Prabhu just said, devotees are generally not inclined to go to the heavenly planets and enjoy heavenly pleasures there. But that verse says that they go to the planets of pious people, and after many, many years of enjoyment there, and then they take birth in the family of devotees or transcendentalists. So does that really apply to the devotees? That's my question. That they go to the heavenly planets.
Well, there's two kinds of, it's mentioned there that those who, after long practice, they fall down from the process, they take birth in the family of devotees. And those who, after a very short practice of yoga, they go to the heavenly planets and come back down again. And yes, it does apply. It applies to devotees also. Prabhupada mentioned when Jayananda left his body, he sort of made a general statement about him leaving, that if you hadn't attained perfection and were thinking of Krishna, then you would have gone to the heavenly planets and come back down and had another chance either way. Or if you were thinking of Krishna, you've gone back to Godhead and so forth. But the main point of that whole sequence is that Krishna says that anyone who practices self-realization and is endeavoring for that is never overcome by evil. Karmana daivanetre na jantur deho papateye. Point is, it's under Krishna's direction, ultimately, and everyone gets exactly what they deserve. Yanti deva vrta devan pitran yanti pratir vrta bhutani yanti bhuteja yanti mam yajinopimam. There are no mistakes in the process. It's divine process, how one's transferred from one place to another, and according to our desire, Krishna will fulfill our desire and put us in a situation exactly fit for us to, you know, make further advancement according to where we left off in the last endeavor.
Yeah, but if the devotee is not interested to go to the heavenly planets, even then he'll be forced to go there?
Well, you know, the story of Gopakumar is instructive in the Brihat Bhagavatamrita. He went to many, many places, and for a devotee, you know, everything can be a learning experience. His place was Goloka Vrindavan with Madan Gopal. That was his Ishtadev. But when he went to many other places, he ended up with certain kinds of, some people were Karmakandis he first met, and he thought, oh, this is a good process. And then after a while, he felt dissatisfied and moved on. And at other times, he met yogis who were meditating, and he thought, oh, this is really good. But then he felt dissatisfied because his mantra and his actual deity was calling him further and further. He went to Vaikuntha, and there he thought, oh, this is surely the perfection of life. And he saw Lord Narayan there, and he wanted to run and embrace him. And all the other members of Vaikuntha ran and stopped him and said, no, no, not here. You can't do that here. But ultimately, he ended up with Krishna and Goloka Vrindavan. Yes?
We should remember that this idea of going to the heavenly planets and coming back is kind of the booby prize for someone who's unsuccessful in practicing Krishna consciousness, and that we really want to go immediately to be with Krishna and his devotees. But I was thinking of the story of Dhruva Maharaj, that he worshipped Krishna with some desire, because he had been insulted, and he wanted the kingdom bigger than even that of his grandfather, and he wanted to show those who had belittled him that how great he was and stuff. But then when he actually attained perfection in yoga practice, and Krishna personally came before him, he felt very ashamed that he had any desire. And he felt very sorry that what he was expressing, that what he wanted was infinitesimal compared to the opulence of devotional service to Krishna. But Krishna said, no, nevertheless, because you wanted it, you have to be a big king in this world, and then you have to attain an impossibly great kingdom afterwards, which is actually a Vaikuntha planet in the material world.
In the second canto of Bhagavatam, it's mentioned that those who are going back to Godhead, if they desire, they can have a look at all the different gradations of the material planets as they're going back. There are different situations for all kinds of different devotees, too. Also, Srila Prabhupada mentions that those who are attaining perfection in Krishna consciousness, they take next birth somewhere in a material universe where Krishna is performing his pastimes to get trained up before they go back to Godhead. But my point from the Brihat Bhagavatamrita was that although Gopakumar went to many different places, including heavenly planets and even to Vaikuntha, he wasn't completely satisfied. And ultimately he ended up going back to Gokula Vrindavan, Goloka Vrindavan. And there was, you know, met Krishna. And so the point is that Krishna is inspiring us from within and from without and instructing us as we start the process to move forward. And if we're put into a situation that is incompatible, it'll be adjusted, you know, by the association of devotees, and we'll make further progress. So there's no inauspicious, there's nothing inauspicious in devotional service. And wherever a devotee ends up, like it's mentioned in the Chaitanya Bhagavat, that many of the devotees, associates, eternal associates of the Lord who appeared in the world, normally they'll appear in the holy dham. But many of the associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared in all kinds of places that were not in the dham. And this was specifically arranged by Lord Chaitanya so that those places get purified by those devotees. So the Lord has his arrangement. He can move devotees around in all kinds of different ways, and sometimes we don't know why he's putting us in a particular situation until later when we find out. Who was it that Lord Chaitanya sent to Varanasi? No. Tapan Mishra was confused about the process of, this isn't exactly toward at your question, but Tapan Mishra was was confused about the process of the devotional service until he met Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who told him the perfection of life is to develop love for Krishna, and he instructed him to chant Hare Krishna. And then Tapan Mishra said, great, this is perfect, I've found what I'm looking for, I'll follow you, I'll go to Vrindavan. And Mahaprabhu said, no, go to Varanasi. There's no devotees in Varanasi. Everyone was Mayavadis. And he was thinking, why did Mahaprabhu send me to Varanasi? But later on, it turned out that Mahaprabhu was going there to deliver Prakashananda Saraswati and to preach Krishna consciousness. And he sent him there ahead of time to set that whole Leela up. So devotees can be sent to, you know, you never know where, to San Jose. Well, I mean, what are we doing here? What's Krishna doing here in the middle of a parking lot? You know, he's appeared here. And somehow all these devotees are appearing here from all different places. It's Krishna's arrangement. Mataji? It's both. Dhruvaloka is an eternal spiritual planet within the material world.
Oh, so but they, I'm not too sure, but I've heard people say that the pole star that you see on the sky is the Dhruvaloka.
Yeah, that's right. So Dhruva Maharaj was given his own spiritual planet within the material world, and it's never annihilated. It's inconceivable. Neither is Navadvip. Navadvip Dham is a spiritual abode of the Lord, and even when the material world's all annihilated and wound up, it exists. Yes, Krishna Maheshwari Prabhu.
Just like to make a comment about the previous question about a devotee who wants to go to Goloka Vrindavan and ends up in the heavenly planets. Now, these type of questions are very easy to ask, and they seem to present a dilemma. But the reality is there's a difference between saying you want to do something and actually really, really wanting to do something. If a devotee at the time of his passing really wants to go to Goloka Vrindavan, he's already achieved self-realization and in some essence is a Jivan Mukta. And so there's no question of him not going there unless there's a Lord's play involved in going elsewhere. But a devotee who ends up in heavenly planets most probably was not a Jivan Mukta. He had not become self-realized at that point, and that's why he ended up there as a reward for the service that he's already done.
Thank you. And that's what Akurnath Prabhu was saying, and it's explicit in the Bhagavad Gita that those who go to the heavenly planets had not achieved a kind of perfection that the others do who take birth in the family of devotees, which is definitely a kind of liberation just from the point of birth, actually, when you're going on Sankirtan for 9 months when you're in the womb, like kids around here. They're hearing Mangalarti and going on Sankirtan, and then they're born, and they're hearing the Maha Mantra constantly. That's a very special kind of a liberated birth, really, and it's an obvious continuation from the last birth. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai, Gop Bhaktivinoda ki jai, Gop Premanande Hari Hari Bo. So now we can put the books away, have Artik, Hare Krishna.